Okay, Enoch Jones, Manned Spacecraft Center, and let me just get on the tape here for record, your title and the shop you work.
Okay, I'm the Assistant Chief of the Guidance System Development Branch in the Guidance Control Division at MSC.
Okay, if, when I do a sign-off, I'll stop and get that again. Mr. Jones, the astronauts are well on their way to the moon. Now comes the use for the first time with its first full test in space of this very complex and very important guidance and navigation system aboard Apollo 8. In fact, to be used by all of the Apollo flights from here on. Now, your work at the Manned Spacecraft Center is centered on this very important unit. Would you tell us briefly what the gadget is, what this great guidance and navigation system is all about?
Okay, that's Rhett, that's a very difficult question to answer in a few words.
Start.
All right. But basically, the system is designed to allow us to maintain a determination of our position and velocity with respect to the Earth or with respect to the Moon, if we so choose, as we perform the mission. And it's so designed that we can update its knowledge of where we are as we proceed to the moon and back from the moon continuously throughout the mission.
There is a sextant as part of the heart of this system, isn't there?
That's correct.
Now, is this a similar sextant to that used by navigators of the seas for years?
Fundamentally, the sextant device that we use to perform the mid-course or cislunar navigation function on board the spacecraft is the same unit as that which the sailors have used for years and years on the high seas. Mm-hmm. It, of course, is a space adaptation of that basic unit.
What do the astronauts sight on with the sextant?
The sextant is used to sight on stars as it's one line of sight sighting, and to sight in conjunction with the star sightings either the Earth's horizon or Earth landmarks or the lunar horizon or the lunar landmarks.
Now, in order for this sextant sort of device to work, you've got to have more than one position to zero in on in order to triangulate, using the old mathematical terms there. Is it really just a complex system of triangulation?
The mechanism whereby we navigate does involve triangulation. However, the technique that's actually used to use the data to triangulate, if you will, or as you have put it, is quite different, primarily in the information processing operation in the computer, the onboard computer, from that which has been used in the years past in either aircraft navigation problems or surface ships problems.
All right, it has a sextant, it has a computer, and then it has another big round ball full of goodies, gyroscopes and such. What is that?
Okay, the gyroscope, or the ball that you referred to, is what we call the inertial measurement unit.
We'll be calling it the IMU, and our listeners will hear that mentioned many times, I'm sure.
I think that's correct. The IMU, then, if we may call it that for the moment, does consist of three gyros and three accelerometers.
One for each axis on which...
One for each axis, that's correct. And what this instrument does for us is allows us to determine its orientation, and again we go back to using the optics in conjunction with the computer as well as the IMU. Mm-hmm. We can determine the orientation of this instrument, the IMU. Mm-hmm. And once we have aligned it, as we use the term, then we can measure...
Use it as a standard?
As a standard or as a reference, mm-hmm. as an orientation reference, if you will. And we can use it to determine the orientation of the vehicle as time goes along with respect to this reference. And we can also use its orientation to measure accelerated forces on the vehicle when, for example, we fire the big SPS engine.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Once you're out in the midst or the... Once out in the void of space, then, you need something to refer to in order to use as a... Once in the void of space, the astronauts must have some sort of standard of reference in order to proceed on and in order to compare any new data with, and that's what the IMU performs. Is that another way of saying it?
That, well, that's correct.
It's pretty technical, isn't it?
Yes, it is somewhat involved. Our basic reference is the star field. Mm-hmm. And so the method in which we align the platform once we're in space is to use the optics, the optical instrument, including the sextant, to sight on these stars. Now, the position of these stars with respect to some reference is stored in the memory of the computer. Mm-hmm. And so by performing in flight measurements to these stars, we have now told the computer what the orientation of the vehicle is with respect to the same reference as the coordinates of the stars are stored. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally, then, the problem is to align the platform by sighting on the stars. Mm-hmm. Once we have done that, then we know the orientation mm-hmm. of our IMU, if you will.
The inertial measurement unit.
That's correct, right. And that is the problem, one function of the navigation task called alignment of your reference system.
Well, Mr. Jones, now, as the astronauts continue on toward the moon, they still will have tracking from the Earth to help them in their navigation procedure. I believe that on our Apollo flights, as far as possible, the Earth and the Mission Control Center here will be controlling, and you'll be comparing data with that from the onboard guidance navigation system, won't you, in order to have backup methods of ensuring their safety?
Yes, I'm glad you said it that way, because we will have the ground system, which is perfectly capable of performing the navigation role on the mission to guide the flight out to the moon and back. What we have spoken of to this point has been in connection with just the onboard navigation system, or the onboard guidance and navigation system. Mm-hmm. It too is capable of performing the navigation role out to the moon and back to the moon, and for that matter in the vicinity of the moon. So we have really two independent capabilities which we will operationally use during the mission together to do the best job using the best combination of both.
To what extent, while Apollo flights are behind the moon when viewed from the Earth, will the onboard system be called upon?
Well, of course, as far as the ground system is concerned, when we're behind the moon, the ground's not able to see the spacecraft, and so it's not able to update its knowledge of where the spacecraft is during that period of time. However, overall, this really represents a small percentage of the total time of the flight. Mm-hmm. However, based on the data that the ground has gotten, while it can communicate with the spacecraft, it's able to determine very well where it is, even though it's not within view, mm-hmm. or while it's behind the back on the backside of the moon. So even though the ground can't continuously see the spacecraft, it still has a good knowledge of where the spacecraft is. The same is true of the onboard system. Of course, we don't have the same constraint on the backside of the moon that the ground does. However, we do have the problem whereby the landmarks, which we could use for navigation using the onboard system while on the backside of the moon, is not too well known, or are not too well known. That is, we haven't done mapping on the backside of the moon to the same extent that we're able to do mapping of pronounced terrain features on the front side of the moon.
It won't be at all like finding landmarks on Earth, that which is most familiar to us.
Certainly not on this mission, and perhaps for many missions to come. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jones.
Certainly.
All right, now I'm going to keep going. This is another little blurb,
I see.
Independently.
Am I talking too loud? Or?
No, let me hold it, if you will.
Oh,
and,
all right.
And then you just don't.
I'll stop a second. Can't eliminate this other draw, though.
I'm one. When Apollo 8 goes behind the moon in preparation for the LOI-1 burn, in preparation for firing that big service propulsion system to put them into lunar orbit, this guidance and navigation system onboard the spacecraft is going to be rather important, because they'll be out of touch from Earth. Isn't that right, Mr. Jones?
At that particular point in the mission, that's correct.
Now, will they have all of the full GNN system up and operating at that time?
Absolutely.
What will they be doing?
The period of time just prior to actually performing the maneuver that you referred to, which we call the TEI maneuver, or the Trans-Earth Injection Maneuver. In referring to the lunar orbit injection maneuver, and I might point out that actually there are two separate maneuvers, which is performed to put us into the desired lunar orbit. Let me first explain that. The orbit about the moon that we will go into on this particular mission is a 60 nautical mile circular orbit. That's the nominal orbit that we're shooting for in this particular mission. Now, in transforming from the translunar phase to the lunar orbit phase, this is done with two separate maneuvers. So there are two LOI maneuvers, or lunar orbit insertion maneuvers. LOI 1 is a maneuver whereby we will attempt to put the spacecraft into an orbit about the moon with a minimum altitude, or the percentian altitude, as we call it, or perilune altitude, as you may have heard it, of 60 nautical miles. And the high point of that orbit, or the apoapsis, or aprocynthian, is 170 nautical miles above the surface.
You know something? I'm never going to get all of those new words straight.
Well, I think we all have some difficulty still. It's easier to write about it than talk about it sometimes. And then after two orbits in that particular kind of an orbit configuration, that is an orbit varying between 60 nautical miles altitude and 170 nautical miles altitude, then we will perform LOI 2. And this maneuver is designed to circularize the orbit at the 60 nautical mile altitude.
Going into the GNN, we want to have background.
Okay. Okay. Now, I think your question really pertains to the activities of the crew leading up to these two maneuvers.
Right, and that all-important guidance and navigation system they must use.
Yeah. Okay, now up to this point in time, of course, during the translunar phase, there has been many activities going on. One, of course, which has been the navigation activity. That is, the crew members will have been performing navigational measurements to update the onboard system's knowledge of its trajectory as it approaches the moon in preparation for these two LOI maneuvers. So there's the navigation function that's been going on. Actually, the entire timeline involving all three crew members during these hours of the mission is quite busy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really prepared or qualified to talk about all of the activities of the three crew members during this phase of the mission. However, I can talk about the GNN role. And let me just mention the fact that we will have been performing navigational measurements. There will be many system checks that are going on just to make completely sure that everything is go prior to committing ourselves to this particular maneuver. I think by virtue of the question, you pointed out the fact that this is a very crucial pair of maneuvers to the overall mission. And we want to make absolutely certain that all systems are go before we would go into lunar orbit. If they aren't, if it's obvious that something is wrong with the GNN system, and we've been now using it and exercising it and checking it both on board and on the ground, during the complete translunar phase, which is many hours duration, so we should have a very good feel and understanding for how well it's performing. And if it's not performing exactly as designed, then we would not perform those two LOI maneuvers.
Thank you very much. Enoch Jones, Assistant Chief of the Guidance and Development Branch at the Manned Spacecraft Center. This is Rhett Turner.